All right, so Chayesara, it feels like it's moving along fast.
Yes.
Gracious. No, I don't know. Pretty soon we're going to be talking about Yosef. okay, yeah, exactly. All right, so let's go to the very first few psukim, and we're going to ask questions that we'd like to ask about these psukim. Vayu Chayesara. Me'ya shana ve'ashrim shana ve'sheva shanim shnei Chayesara. So these were, I didn't put a translation, I'm sorry. These were the days, the life of Sarah, 100 years and 20 years and 7 years. These are the years of the life of Sarah. A very verbose way of telling us how old Sarah was when she died. And Sarah dies in Kiryat Arba, which is Hebron in Eretz Canaan. And Avram comes to give hespedim and to cry over her, etc., etc. And the whole world wants to know the first pasuk. Vayu chayei Sarah. This is her life. Me'ah shana ve'ashim shana ve'sheva shanim. How old is she? 127. How else could you say that? Me'ah ve'ashim ve'sheva shanim. Shine. What's going on here? And that shnei chayei Sarah. I already know how many years. What is happening here, right? Good, fine. So there are a lot of answers. Last year we gave some of the answers to this question, but there's more to say. But take a look at Rashi, who kind of gives us some idea here. But it probably brings us to more questions. So Rashi picks up on our question: why shana over and over again? Why? To tell you that each one has its own drasha, meaning mea shana, esrim shana, sheva shanim. Each one of them, 120 and 7, hence the title. Each one has its own drasha. Meaning what? Ma bat esrim lo chata, sharei eina bat onshin. So just like a 20-year-old, bat mea kabat esrim lachet. When she was 100, she was like a 20-year-old when it came to sin. Ma bat esrim lo chata, sharei eina bat onshin, af bat mea belo chet, u bat esrim kebat sheva leyofi. So when she's 100, she's like 20. When she's 20, she's like 7. What does it mean that when you're 100, she was like a 20-year-old for chet, because a 20-year-old has no chet? I thought by the time you're 20, you usually have a lot of chet. You know? So what does that mean?
I feel like it's funny. Like, I would have done 7 for chet and 20 for
right.
you.
Right.
Yeah.
But
right.
You're not accountable for them
yet. Ah. Good. So this is a little secret that we don't tell kids when they get a bar mitzvah, which is that even though you're bar mitzvah and a bar mitzvah 12 and 13, there's like, you know, whatever this means exactly, like, the Ribono Shel Olam understands what psychology has taught us. Your prefrontal cortex. All high school boys, ask any high school boy. Why is it that, because my prefrontal cortex isn't.
They know.
Because every teacher tells them that.
Now they know.
They all know. Yeah. They all know that there's a thing, because it's a great excuse for them.
Uh-huh.
So my fault that I did all the things that I did, because my prefrontal cortex is not fully developed. Every high school kid can tell you this, because especially the boys, because they know that that's their way out. Like, what do you want from me? My prefrontal cortex is not fully developed. So, I think that's part of that idea. Olach Ora is that Chazal understood that a human being, even, you know, I probably say it sometimes at bar mitzvahs, but like, it's not true. You're not becoming an adult member of the Jewish people. Look at these kids. They're not adults. Oh, they used to be adults. They get married when they were 14. I don't know. But they're not adults now. That's for sure. When you hit 20, you're responsible for yourself a little bit. Now it's 30,
emerging
40, whatever. You know, I became an adult the other day, you know. But like I don't know what age it is, but 20 at least, it's a little more like sense of responsibility that a 13-year-old or 12-year-old doesn't have. Fine. So but that's by the way, this idea of bat onshin at 20, it probably comes from that idea. Fine. Yeah, but 20 to 7 with Yofi also is a little bit strange. That's like a little weird. But whatever that means exactly, right? Yeah.
It's also interesting because, like, just in last week's Parsha, Hashem calls her out in the Parsha.
Yes.
Of like, oh, no, you didn't. Like, you're right. Mold.
Yes.
I didn't laugh. Yeah, you did. So,
I had multiple people ask me this question over Shabbos. I was like, gotta listen to this year. But multiple people came to me to ask me about this thing. about the laughing, about the laughing in general, about the laughing, why she get why Hashem attacks her. Mm-hmm. I'm like, see, you have to see Rav Suretskin. He really thinks he's attacking Avram also. But, mm-hmm. but like, that was, but anyways, she's saying.
My point being, like, Rashi talking about, like, how pure she was. In terms of, like, not doing any Averos.
Good.
Like, literally the last part. I don't know if it was technically a sin, but, like, we literally have an example in last
not perfect.
Of that, of her, like, doing right. something.
Good, so let's take it, so flip that around, though. Flip that around.
Okay.
What's the answer to that?
She was 20, I don't know.
She got one, like, no, we have, like, one yeah, example where Hashem was angry at her. I mean, like,
okay.
like,
yeah.
No, right?
I mean, the hard
thing is, ain't other but Irish, Shaloya, I said,
Rabbi. We said she, like, laughed eternally in her heart, and he knew that she didn't believe the whole thing.
Okay.
How could he hold us against?
Okay, no, but my point being, even if you make this, even if you make it, about, I had a new shot there I thought about for Shabbos.
Okay, because
just take us back. Why does why would it be, even if you take the regular pshat, this is not what we're supposed to talk about today, but it's okay. The regular pshat that Avraham laughs and it's like a laugh of joy and she laughs a laugh of like, what? Bikirba, I love that right? Like Bikirba, like she looks at herself internally, I can't, this is not possible for me. So I was thinking, it's similar to in the Haftorah, the Elisha goes to this woman, he's been like sleeping at her house, right? She like provides a room for him, the Isha Shunamit, right? And he asks her, what does she want? And she's like, I don't know, like, leave me, I don't care. And Gehazi is like, hello, she doesn't have a child. Give her a child. So he says, you're going to have a baby. And she basically says to him, like, do me a favor. Don't mess with me.
Right.
It's very beautiful, actually. She says, like, please don't make me, you know, don't make me promises that you can't keep. I've been tortured enough of my life. Like, don't tell me that now. If it's not really going to happen, don't say that to me. And I was thinking, like, maybe that's the pshat a little bit, like a very human answer, right? Which is that Avram is like, you know, as much challenge as he experienced in that experience, which is a lot, and it's not the same as his wife did, right? Avram also had a baby with a different woman. But even beyond that, just like, it's a little different. It's not the same, the husband and the wife. It's not the same experience. And almost when he's like, wow, like, oh my gosh, like, really? That's amazing. She's like, I almost don't want to believe it because to her, it hurts too much to believe, right? Someone's like, almost like, it's harder for her. It's harder for her, maybe. I don't know. I thought that was like my psychological terror to that question. I think there's something real that, but it fit very much with the Batitzchak's Rabbi Kirbali, where we said that she almost can't. Again, she gets over it and she names him Yitzchak, etc. Like she grows there. That's what I would argue. She grows from that. It's hard for her to overcome that trauma, et cetera. And she like moves forward from that. So I thought that was like maybe that was my own idea. But anyways, the bottom line is I would just say, yeah, so she doesn't mean no hate. Doesn't mean she did nothing wrong. There's no such thing as people who didn't sin. I've said a shot before. There are the Gemara gives examples of like a few people who didn't sin. And all those people are not famous. All right, they're like Kilav, the son of Binyamin. Like the people who like you didn't never Yishai, the father of David, right? We've noticed that the different people, Binyamin, Ben Yaakov. So all these people who are listed as the people who never sinned, I heard this one, Rebbe Chalap said this, Rebbe Zvulun Chalap. He said, all the people who are listed as never sinned, what do you also know about them? You've never heard about them before. You can sit in the corner and do nothing and be by yourself and not, right? And you won't make any mistakes. But they went out into the world and they did things. Avram made a mistake. Avram's not listed there. And Yitzchak and Yaakov and Yosef and David and all those people, Moshe, they're not listed on that list. Why? Because there are people out in the world trying to help Klal Yisrael. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you're going to make mistakes.
But who would she have learned from not to let?
Okay, you're right.
Arbitrary.
Right. There's also no mitzvos.
New here.
There's also no
right.
mitzvos.
Right.
There's no mitzvos.
There's nothing.
So we're not like, you know what I mean? But the point is being that, I'm just saying that, the idea that she was scolded for something and could still be listed here as
right.
Bas... 100 like bas 20 for chait doesn't bother me because it doesn't mean zero chait, it means tzaddik, which means very little chait compared to a lot of good stuff. Because there's no person who doesn't do averos. That's the right. In tzaddik ba'aretz shayasa tov lo yechta. There's no such thing as a person who doesn't do averos. We should always remind ourselves that we make mistakes. There is no person who doesn't do averos. If you don't do averos, you're an AI. You're not human. It's not real. To be a person is to make mistakes and then to learn. So the growth is to learn. That's the goal. Okay, but the bottom line is we're still left with like and Shnei Chaye Sarah again, Kulan Shav Natova. Very nice, they're all good. Also funny, all good.
Right.
Sarah's life, all good? I don't know. right? Tova, whatever you want to say, good means, right? But it wasn't easy, that's for sure. Maybe that's because easy doesn't mean, good doesn't mean easy. But okay. But there's a lot to do here. Okay, so let's just take, I just want to show you first a piece from Rav Hirsch, and then I'm going to share with you a really, really nice idea from a sefer called the Milchamos Yehuda, which I finally found in print, which I want to show you. Okay, let's take a look at Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch writes the following. This is the only place in Tanakh where a woman's age is recorded. The probable reason is that a woman's life is generally further removed from the events of public life, fine. But the bottom line is like this. It's the only place. Another unique feature of our verse is the phrase v'yihiyu chayei sarah instead of shnei chayei sarah. Right, this is apparently so unique that it must be supplemented or corrected, as it were, at the end of the verse with the repeated words, shnei chayei sarah, meaning the Torah has given us many examples until now of people whose ages are recorded. Misu Shelach and Chanoch, and we've listed lots and lots of people who've lived and died and told us how long they lived. There's lots of that in the first few parshios. So why doesn't it say, vayu shnei chayei sarah? Doesn't say that. And at the end, then it adds it at the end. As is well known, our sages comment that here the life of Sarah is divided into three distinct age groups. Our verse literally says not that Sarah lived 127 years, but that she lived 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years. These three figures represent the entire course of a human life: childhood, young adulthood, and complete old age. So usually we think like 18, you're an adult. That's not really, but 20, right? 20 is, right? It's different. A life of spiritual and moral perfection cannot be summed up better than by saying that the person was old in his old age, mature in his prime, and a child in his childhood, meaning each thing in the right place. Very nice, right? Mm-hmm. Moreover, our sages say, the one who truly lives takes the crowning quality of each stage of life into the next stage. Hence also the expression, ba bayamim. Literally, he comes through the days. It's a pasuk used a lot of times. Avraham, ba bayamim, you find this a lot in the day. That they like start to reach a certain, the phrase you can keep saying in English, ripe old age, which I don't like. Right. But like right, a certain, you're progressing. He does not sink in his days, nor is he swaddled up by them. Rather, he passes through them. He retains all the spiritual and moral attainments of his past and takes them with him into the future. He does not permit the days and years to rob him of anything that has become truly his. It's a very beautiful idea, right? That the 127 is like she went through each stage of life and used it the right way. When you're 7, there's a certain, I don't know how she did when she was 7, right? But when you're 20, there's a certain place you're supposed to be. And when you're 100, Tanai Nahara, there's a place where you're supposed to be. And like an appreciation and a progression of life, right? How that goes in life.
Also,
I don't know about the 101 yet. I haven't experienced
that.
That
also like marries nicely with what Rashi said about the Kolam Shagid L'Tova. Like,
right.
Everything was good. This was exactly
everything in its place.
This was how it was supposed to be.
Good. Excellent. Yes, I like that a lot. Thus, Sarah took the beauty of childhood into young adulthood, and she retained the innocence of a woman of 20 all the days of her life. This view of our sages contrasts greatly with the view that is commonly held in our time, and not necessarily to our advantage. The sages look for beauty not in the woman of 20, but in the girl of 7. And for innocence, not in childhood, but in young adulthood. Okay? We're accustomed to speaking of innocence of a child. But it'd be sad if one would have to envy children their innocence. For innocence presupposes the possibility of guilt. Innocence means to have struggled with sensuality and passion and to have overcome them. Only a girl who has matured into womanhood and only a boy who has matured into manhood, only they can reach the level of true innocence. So he's just pointing out that idea that why is it flipped? Why is Yofi by 7 and the maturity or whatever, innocence, of, you know, that's 20, because that means they've been through some things, right? And have kind of come to a certain place.
Why her years were good.
Right.
They're supposed to be making
progress, right? Dealing with challenge, etc., and coming out, you know, having grown from that. All these years together are called Chayei Sarah. She lived in all of them. All of the 127 years of her life were chayim, vital and joyful life, good and meaningful life, and there was not a moment of it that she would have preferred not to have lived. Not that it was all good and easy, but it was, she found her way through. Nevertheless, so the account concludes, chayei sarah were only shnei chayei sarah, years out of Sarah's life. They were only one period, one part of her life. For life is not measured by the span of time that is given to us in this world. Right? Tzadikim afilu b'misasan kruan chayim. They go mechayel l'chayel. Meaning that a tzaddik is alive even when they pass away. That's why the Chazal say Yaakov Avinu lo mes. Yaakov Avinu didn't die. Of course he died. He was buried in Maror Shachpelah. No, but the point being that the things that he stood for continued to be preserved. Our sages in their wisdom say, Yodea Hashem Yemei Tamimim. God recognizes the days of those who live holy with him. Keshem Shehein Tamimim, Kach Shenosam Tamimim. There's not a day, not a minute of such a life that is not recorded in the book of remembrance before God. In the 127 years of such a life in this world, there is not a day that is unimportant. However, Nachalasam La'olam Tiyah, their true heritage lies hidden in the world to come. As our sages point out, it says, Shnei Chayei Sarah. These were but years of Sarah's life. It's a very interesting answer, right? So first of all, he points out that the 7 and the 20 and the 100 are pointing out that each one of them has their place. And that's sort of the point that they were making. Not that they were great or easy or, right, but that she made her way and kind of like found herself appropriately in each stage and kind of found her way in each stage, right? And also that they're only Shnei Chayei Sarah because at the end of the day, we're not just the number of years that we live. We are, our legacy is what we do with them. And that lasts forever, way past that number. It's just a number in the end of the day, right? And the number doesn't define us in that way. Fine. I think it's a very, very nice answer. And it's nice on its own. But I want to show you a different answer. Okay? And a different answer comes from a sefer called the Milchamos Yehuda, which you have in source number 7. Okay, but we're going to see a couple things before that. Okay? Because there's a medrash that we need to see first. Why do I not have it in my... Oh, I do. Okay. Says the Medrash in source number 4. Take a look at this Medrash. Rabbi Akiva haya yoshev v'doresh. Rabbi Akiva was giving a drasha. He was speaking to a group of people going to teach Torah. V'hatzibor misnamnim. And the people were starting to fall asleep. Anyone who's ever had the zechus to teach Torah to the Jewish people knows that sometimes you give a speech and sometimes people start to fall asleep. If you're lucky, it doesn't happen too often. But they start to fall asleep. Bikesh la'oran. He doesn't get upset, right? Bikesh la'oran. But he tries to wake them up. Sometimes if that's happening to me, so I'll make sure to tell, I'm telling a story, I'll make sure to do something like that. You know, people will, you know, pick up, right? But okay. But usually if you lost them, you lost them. You can't really, it's a difference. That's a public speaking piece. It's your fault. If you lost them, then you lost them. Unless it's Pesach morning. I almost have given up on giving drashas Pesach morning, because it's not my fault. Because I get up to speak and everyone is already asleep before I even start. So that, you know, whatever. I used to give a drasha both days of Pesach, then I started giving only one day, and now I'm like, I don't even know if I should do it at all, because everyone's just too tired. I don't blame them. I'm also tired. I digress. Okay, he wanted to wake them up. Amar, he said, Ma rasa Esther shatimloch al sheva ve'esri mumeya medina. What did Esther see? What did Esther see? That she ruled over 127 Medinos. Elatavo Esther Shahaisa Bas Bita Shasara. Oh, what was it? That Esther was the granddaughter, great, great, great granddaughter of Sari Menu. Shahaisa Kuf Vichaf Vizevin Vizayin Vitimloch Al Kuf Vichaf Vizayin Medinos. Right? So the only other place in Tanakh where you find 127, besides Sarah's age, is, you've heard this before, is the 127 Medinos that Esther ruled over. Super nice. Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Esther,
beautiful.
Sarah.
So perfect.
So ask a million questions on the Medrash. Go.
Why is this what we're
going to
wake up?
Wow, everyone wakes up. Givaldic. Wow, Rabbi Akiva. I mean, the truth is we've heard this 127 thing before. So maybe, okay, fine, it's not so exciting. Maybe never heard it before. It's kind of cool. Yeah. I never thought about it. 127. Cool. Okay, fine. But yeah, that's going to wake them up. That's the thing. Okay. What else? What other questions do you have?
I mean, it also doesn't make so much sense because most Jewish women are descended from Sarah, I would assume.
All of them.
Yeah. I mean, unless they're like a Gioras.
Like, yeah. Right. Like, everybody.
What does that mean that like...
Everyone, you're all her great-granddaughters. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so why is it Esther's specific?
Bingo. Good. Right. Yeah. So what? Good. Okay, so what? Yeah. Why does this wake them up? Why is this Esther's, like, oh, she's the great-granddaughter? Well, we're all great-granddaughters. I'm great-grandson of Sari Menu. Well, it's like the big Gadilla. Good, yeah? What else?
What's so wonderful about ruling over 100?
Why is that a special thing? Why is that great? I don't know. What was the big deal? Was that good? I thought she didn't want it. Like, what is this about? And also, like, I don't know, the number 127, like, yeah.
Also, like, did Esther rule over the 127?
Good, good.
Was Mordechai?
Good. Good, good.
I'm sure she's
married to him. Great, excellent. Okay, so I want to share with you. The Milchamos Yehuda is a sefer written by... Is that right his name?
Yes.
Rav Mordechai Yehuda Lubart. I feel very important to say his name because I've said this idea a different time in a different context, and I said the wrong name. There's a different sefer called Milchamos Yehuda, written by a different rabbi. And I, when I quoted them, I thought it was the other person. And then I went to find it finally inside this morning. I was like, wait a second, that is the wrong person. So it's very important you should know. It's this Rabbi Mordechai Yehuda Lubart. So he wrote the sefer, and he has many, many, many explanations, actually, for this medrash. Okay? And I'll share with you one of his explanations. So we know Sari Menu. Her name was not always Sarah. What was her name before? Next source on your page. Vayomer Elokim El Avram, Sarai Ishtecha Lo Sikra Shema. Sarai Ki Sarah Shema. Her name is not Sarai anymore. Her name will come Sarah. We're always like, okay. All right.
She was Yiska before that.
Yiska, good.
Maybe 7.
Yeah.
Yiska, 20.
Maybe Sarai. 100 becomes Sarah. Okay, good. What's the difference between the word Sarai and the word Sarah?
My princess.
Okay, Sarai is for me, and Sarah.
Everybody.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Right. So, and what does it to be? Yeah. What does it mean to be Sarai? What does it mean Sarai mean? What's a sar?
Sar
ruler. Like a ruler. Yeah, a ruler, officer, someone who rules over something. Okay, a sar, right? So Sarai is sort of like my ruler, and Sarah is a general ruler. Look at Rashi. Damashma Sarai li velo la'acherim. Sarai is like I'm doing it for myself. Right? Ki Sarah stam shema shetei Sarah al kol. Her name is not Sarai. Her name is Sarah. Okay? What does that mean? Okay? So take a look at the Milchamos Yehuda. He explains it. So I'll explain it. But he says the following. Odi Yesh Lomar, because he's given multiple answers. This is one of his answers. Shrebi Akiva Ra'as Hatzibar Misnamnim, Ve'inan Shomun Midvarv. He sees that they're not paying attention to him. Ve'hizbonen Ve'inyan Sarah Ve'Esther. He thinks about Sarah and Esther. Shemisham Yesh Lomar Ki Achisaron Be'ashpa Al Hatzibar. He's giving the answer away early, but it's okay. We'll give the answer away and then we'll see how it works. Fix it. Ki Achisaron Be'ashpa Al Hatzibar. The fact that he's being unsuccessful in impacting and influencing the people. Novea michi saron b'mashpia. Okay, lahashpia, the hashpa is the influence. The mashpia is the influencer. The real type, not this type. Okay, but a mashpia, this is the new thing also in the yeshivas. That used to be, I work in NYU, I'm called a mashkiach. Okay, that's someone who like, you know, you're supposed to, you're a supervisor of the students, not really a supervisor, but you're like a guidance counselor, right? But now, like a lot of people, they don't want to be called mashkiach, and they call mashpia. So mashpia is an influencer. I mean, I don't know, I'm not watching over you. I'm not a mashkiach. I'm mashpia. I have influence. I have influence. Okay? They would never call themselves influencers, but that's a language. A mashpia. They have such roles now. In yeshivas, some shuls, a mashpia. Okay. But the point is that if there's a lacking in the hashpa, if the influence is not working, whose fault is that? It's not their fault. It's on me, right? It's a chisaron b'mashpia. It's a problem with the person trying to do the hashpa. Ubehis orus sho'oreres atzmo hishtamesh gam loreres atzibur. So in the way that he's going to try to do what? If it's not working, I'm not inspiring people. What do I need to do?
I need to wake them up.
But what I need to do first, I have to look at myself. Right? First, I have to inspire myself in some way. There's something that I'm not doing right. I need to work over here, and then it'll come out, come forth to others. Okay? V'hu k'masha amru chazal, haniskar hamuva barashi parashat lachacha, lo sikra shema sarai, demashma sarai li, v'lo lachem. This is what the pasuk means. It says that don't call her sarai, which means sarai for myself, but not for others. Ki sarai stam shema shetei sarai la'alakol. She's going to have a ruling in a certain sense over others. What does that mean? Sarah didn't give her life, which most people are. She was much more inwardly focused. Sarah. And by the way, it's not a small thing. She had the ability to rule over herself. To be a ruler over yourself is very difficult. Right? So many of us spend our whole lives just trying to, and we should do both, right? But trying to figure out how to like manage ourselves, to do the right thing, to say the right thing, to not to step out of line, etc. That's hard enough to try to just to work on myself. It's hard enough, right? v'ishtachrera mishibudim gashmim v'negios atzmios, to free ourselves from the physical things that are physical desires, the things that pull us in different directions, right, in our own negios, our biases, etc., which are difficult for us to shake. V'chayse rak l'to'elas harabim l'gayer osam l'achnisam tachas kanfei hashchina. Right, so she was, so this is Sarah's, you know, success in working on herself was she was helping people to come close to Hashem. Okay? That was just when she's working on herself, he says. Okay? V'acharei avodas, because when she leaves, when they leave Haran, remember, they bring ha-nefesh she'asu b'Haran. Meaning they were, and Rashi says, Avram worked with the men and Sarah worked with the women. Meaning Sarah was already working, helping people already. Okay? V'acharei avodas l'tayar l'kayesh etzchayeha. But if she continued to work on herself and to raise herself to the different levels, to a higher level, Nitan la Hashem Sarah. Her name changes from Sarai to Sarah. La kol ha'olam kulo. You're not just going to have impact on a few people. You're going to have impact on not just your family, not just right, but on the whole world. Shiyu divareha nishmayim lahashpi al rabim. It's going to have it's going to go forward to help lots and lots of people. And this influence goes all the way down to Esther. Why? And she becomes to rule over Kaf Zayin Medinos. Okay, so but let's pause there for a second. What does that mean? How did this idea of Sarah, who goes from being sort of like a little more internally focused, right, to then becoming someone who's mashpia on lots of people, how is that power reflected in the life of Esther?
Wasn't there when Mordechai told her, go?
I stumped him, finally.
Like, at first, Esther was scared. She didn't want to go to the castle. And then Mordechai said, this is your destiny. Like, if you don't do it, someone else will, and you're going to be...
Take a look at the next source, number eight.
And then she says, go back and tell everyone. Boom. Fast for 3 days. And
Esther goes through her transformation. Take a look at source number eight. Ve'agelo Mordechai. Mordechai sends information to Esther. This is all the terrible things that are starting to happen. Mordechai finds out all this information, this deal between Haman and Ahasuerus. He says, Esther, bad news. You got to go talk to the king. He doesn't send himself, he sends Hasach, this messenger. And she goes and she tells him. So she sends a message back. Any person, she says, the rule is, if you go to the king without permission, what happens to you? Off with his head. You die. It's very scary. You cross the threshold, you're sentenced to death unless the king pardons you. That's the point. It's not like it's dangerous. If you cross the threshold without permission, you are chayv misa. You will die. Unless the king decides to uproot the gzera on you. That's how serious it was. Okay? V'chaya, and then they live. V'ani lo nikreislav ola melech sheshloshim. It's been a month already. The king has not called me. So basically, she's saying to him,
"I'm dead.
No, I can't do that.
I can't. Right. How could I?
I know that there's danger for the Am Yisrael, but I can't do that. I'm gonna die. By the way, does she say I'm a goner 100%?
No.
No. What does she say? What is she saying? She's saying it's a risk.
It's a known thing.
It's a known thing, but it's not for sure gonna happen.
Right.
You know that Ahasuerus liked her. It's not like it was impossible, but it was dangerous. It was dangerous. Mordechai says back to her, and this we know. Don't think Esther gets very sharp with her. You're going to sit and hide in the palace while all the other Jews die. If you're quiet now, don't worry, we're going to be fine, he says. Not worried. Going to be fine. Someone else will save us. Ve'at u'beis avich tovid, but then you're going to be out because you're refusing to risk your life. U'miyodeal im'la'es kazos higalim achos. And who knows, Esther, maybe you were placed in this moment for this thing, right now, that you were chosen for this. Ve'atomer es la'shiva Mordechai, so she gets the message and she responds, Leich kenos esplay Yehudim hanin tzayim b'shushan. This is the moment when the story shifts. That pasuk. Leich kenos esplay Yehudim. Go get everybody. Bring them together. If it's sumo lai. Told you a million times. My favorite pasuk in the entire Megillah. It's a song. Whatever. Okay. So it's my, but this is that moment. It's a moment not just where now Am Yisrael's going to get together. That's all true. But what is it really? It's a moment where Esther changes from Sarai to Sarah. It's the moment where Esther... A human being thinks about themselves. That's a normal thing. She's not crazy. It's not like she's like super selfish. She's normal. It's scary. It's real. And she says, I'm too nervous to do that. I can't. Let's wait. Maybe he'll call me in a couple of days. Like, why do I have to go? And Mordechai says, no. Esther, like, that's not how that's going to work. And that's when she realizes, you know what? Okay, you're right. Okay? Im Kane, if that's true, now we understand what makes Esther... the great granddaughter of Sari Menu. Because just like Sari Menu changes from Sarai to Sarah, again, a change that I wouldn't say that we is so obvious to us in the Psukim, for being fair about it. I think it's harder to see. In the Esther change is more obvious. The Sarah change is less obvious in what she does, but more obvious in the change in her name. Esther doesn't have her name changed. It's very clear in the change of Sarah's name. Hashem was saying something to her. You're going to change now. You're not just going to work in this little crew. You're going to become now like your Av Hamon Goyim, she's going to be Sarah Lakol. Right? Sarah Imenu becomes the mother, grandmother of Yishmael. Right? Yeah. I mean, Yishmael's not her son. But I'm saying, like, this is her son Yitzchak is going to be the beginning of all of it. Right? And so this is going to be her job. And if that's true, this explains Rabbi Akiva. So just go back to the end of that, of source number seven. Yeah? He writes at the end there, Rabbi Akiva, three lines up from the bottom. On the end of the line, Rabbi Akiva, Berov Tzidkasa V'Kedushasa L'Kach Zos L'Musar Haskel La'atzmo. So now, what's Rabbi Akiva? They're not listening. He wants to wake them up. And he talks about Sari Menu and Esther 127. Like, what's the pshat?
It's for himself.
It's
for himself.
Trying to inspire himself. It's very beautiful. Rabbi Akiva, Berov Tzidkasa V'Kedushasa L'Kach Zos L'Musar Haskel. He doesn't say, Chevro, what are you, like, losers sleeping? When the rabbi's talking, it's not nice. Don't give them Musar. He gives himself Musar. What am I not doing that is not allowing them to be inspired? Beautiful, right? V'gam loreres hatzibor shayun yerdamim v'lo shamun nivar. He wanted to also wake them up too. Al kamatzrichim la'avod u'la'amo al atzmo k'dei she'iyeh b'kocho la'ashpia al hatzibor v'yihu devar v'nishmayim. Beautiful. It's a great mussar for rabbis. But it's a beautiful mussar for all of us. Like, instead of always looking at other people and saying, tisk tisk, right? Why aren't you this? I don't know. What are you doing to help people feel inspired? Because the things, the choices that we make also inspire people and also make other people feel connected. And it's not just always on everyone else to figure it out. Maybe it's on me, right? To also help other people feel more inspired. Maybe the choices that I make will rub off on other people. Maybe if I make better choices, maybe other people will see that and think about it without me yelling at them. By inspiring myself, by being an inspired person, we've all experienced that, right? You're around an inspired person, all of a sudden you've just, it's contagious. You just want to be, there's certain people you just want to be around, right? Being around those people, it just makes you feel, and they don't have to be, have an official position, right? But it's just a certain type of person. You want to be in that person's space because they're just positive and they're moving and doing and you just want to be around that because, like, it makes me feel different. So we can also be that within our own normal tendencies for ourselves, whatever that means. Every person is different. None of us are super loud. None of us are whatever it's going to be. But every person has the ability to do that. And that, he says, is what Rabbi Akiva is really saying. Yeah.
I have two thoughts. One is, I feel like I shared it in this group before, but also just another example of, like, being a thumb pointer and not a finger pointer.
Mm-hmm.
So that Rabbi Akiva's story is, like, such a good example of that.
Yes.
But the second thing is, like, I love this Esther story and this Esther connection. And, like, we know so much about Avraham as, like, the influencer. But I don't know. It just, we don't get a lot of, like, evidence
of Sarah.
Of Sarah as,
yes,
an influencer.
We have a Chazal tell us.
This name change, it feels, right, real. So I don't know. It just feels like a little flimsy, mm-hmm, to me. Mm-hmm. It's a nice idea.
Chazal are the ones who do this. It's absolutely correct. You don't find... Well, I'll give you one other example where you find it. Not of Sarah as an influencer, as Sarah as a, who has a concern for influence. Where do you have an example where Sarah is concerned about influence? Really, Yishmael.
She's worried about Yishmael.
Really, Yishmael. Right? That Yishmael is mitzachek. So she is a person who clearly has a... sense of what type of influences are positive and what type are negative. Again, that's very internal. It's in her home. But you do see that with her. But again, there's very little. She does very little speaking. She does very little. You don't see her up on stage getting people, you know, inspired. Correct. She's not Rebbetzin Youngreich, so at least not that we know about. But like, it's true. You don't really see that as much. You see it really in these very small ways. But what I think is actually very interesting, it's true. You're right. But what I'll tell you what's so interesting is that we actually have another example of this same idea, similar idea, I would say, in the life of Avram Avinu. And Soloveitchik asked the question, he says, I don't understand. Avram Avinu spends his whole life like this like big hero, fighting kings and jumping in fiery furnaces and sacrificing his son on a mountain. And he's like this like big showman, right, in a certain sense. What is the end of his life? The end of his life, which is Chaya Sarah, what does he do? Mm-hmm. He buries his wife.
Right.
And he finds a shidduch, and he finds a shidduch for his son.
Right.
All of a sudden, he's like gone from the limelight. He's gone. Not there anymore. And it's kind of like a, I wouldn't say it's like a dud for the end of his life, but if you look at Avram as like this, I'm getting really nervous. But if you what are you saying? But if you only see Avram for the flair,
right,
there's a whole, not a lot of flair left at the end. And Soloveitchik says, that's exactly the point. That's exactly the point.
Like,
so he says,
it wasn't just about the influence and the community and everything to do. Like, he still took care of his...
Where does he go back to in the end? Mm-hmm. What's the end of his life? Where is he spending his time?
His family.
His wife, right. And his family. And he has more wives and more children. Important. And that's also like a...
That's it, right? Family.
It's like a domestic tableau.
Exactly. In a certain sense, Avram runs around the world trying to save the whole world. And Hashem says, I'm like, that's great. But it's almost like he tries Egypt, doesn't work. Right? He tries other places, doesn't work. He tries even Yishmael, doesn't work. Hashem says, Ki bi Yitzchak yikar lechazara. And the Rav says this. He says, I tried to find it inside for you. I couldn't find the piece. I couldn't find it today. I promise you it was there. Where the Rav basically writes, he says, after all of his running around and trying to save the whole world, Hashem says to him, Avram, just have a family first. Mm-hmm. Raise your son. Let him eventually raise his own children. Start there. You're not going to, right? But where are all those people? Avram Megarius Anashim, Sard Megarius Anashim, Hanevish Asher Asu B'Charan. Where do they all go, all those people? They're gone. We don't know who they are. Whatever there really was, right? Whatever Chazal is trying to teach us, but we don't find them anywhere. There's no people who follow him anymore, who we find about later, right? It's only the people in the family who end up being the progenitors of this whole thing. And there's no other people, like, you could imagine people who are like, who are you? How are you Jewish? Oh, well, like my great-great-great-grandparents, they were part of those chevra that Avram was like, you know, getting them involved in this. There's multiple families. That would have been a reasonable thing to happen. Avram was a very influential person. And the answer is, actually, in the end, they all fell away. And the only people that stayed with it, and Hashem wants him to stay with it, is his child.
Not even Eliezer.
Not Eliezer's family.
He's not Jewish.
Eliezer's nothing. He's not part of us. Yeah. Eliezer doesn't become it. Well, there's no Jews yet. But yeah. His family is sidelined.
Right.
He wanted it. He doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Right? And
well,
right. But in the end of the day, it's just this one line. It's kind of like not nice almost when you think about it. But the messaging there is extraordinary. Okay. I love this piece, and this maybe I should have showed it to you. I should have put it on the page, but I wasn't sure if we're going to have time for this. But Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was interviewed for Chavrusa magazine. Chavrusa magazine is the magazine of the Ritz Rabbinic alumni. Ritz is right, the rabbinical school in YU. So they did like some, you know, 50 questions, whatever it was. I think it was the 50th year as a Rosh Hashiva in Shiva Haratzion. So they asked him a number of questions, but one of the questions they asked him was, what are you most proud of having accomplished during your 50 years of service to Klal Yisrael? And he writes, and there's a lot of things he could have written, right? He could have said, founding Rosh Hashiva, Shiva Haratzion. He could have said, thousands of Talmidim he influenced. He's all these Talmidim all over Eretz Yisrael who are running communities. This is what he writes. Rav Aaron answered as follows. Quote, looking back over the past 50 years, what I am proudest of is what some would regard as being a non-professional task. I'm proudest of having built, together with my wife, the wonderful family that we have. It is a personal accomplishment, a social accomplishment, and a contribution through what they are giving and will give, each in his or her own way, in service of the Ribono Shel Olam in the future.
I love that.
Yeah. He didn't? That's his greatest accomplishment.
His legacy.
His legacy.
He had a legacy with a capital L.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah. This is it.
That's not what he considered.
I went on, I think I mentioned this to you, that I went 2 weeks ago. Did I mention this last time? I don't know. That I went, they had a thing at Renat a couple weeks ago, Motzei Shabbos, for Rabbi Yosef Adler, who passed away. I was Rabbi Adler's assistant rabbi for 2 years. And I worked under him at TBC for 3 years. So they had lots of speakers to talk about the greatness of Rabbi Adler. The person was just an extraordinary person. He taught, Rabbi Adler would like, and this is the truth about who he was, and everyone said it. If he was talking to him face to face, he was, had some personality. But when he would teach, all of a sudden he would like transform into this a master teacher. Both in the shul and in the school, and a person who has a legacy. The TBC just named the building after him, and the main shul in Rina is named after him. He made that shul, he was the founding rabbi of the shul, he made that school into the school. Like, amazing accomplishments as a teacher, as a rabbi, as a posek, all these things. Rabbi J.J. Schachter spoke that night also, and he said, he turns to the family, and he said, in the end of the day, after what everybody said, he looks at the family and says, his most important accomplishment was all of you. And he would tell you that. And Rabbi Schachter said because he said it to me. He said, I tell all of my students, Rabbi Schachter is like the rabbi of a lot of the rabbis, including myself. He said, I tell all of my students, do not slaughter your children. This is a Landry, he says. Do not slaughter your children on the altar of the community. Because your kids come first. Whenever I talk to Rabbi Schachter, ever, I'm sitting with him and talking to him, and his wife calls. Excuse me 1 second, your child is calling. And he picks up the phone. Okay. It's like he does it not just because it's the right thing to do. He does it as a lesson to all of us. He taught me that from the time I was a very young rabbi. Don't do it. Don't save the world and leave your kids on the side. It's a very important message. But the point being that it's the same. It's not so different even than this other point, which is that the message of Sarah and Esther is: at first, you have to work inside. First, you work on the inside out. If you work on yourself, you spend time inside. So then hopefully you'll have impact, right, moving forward, right? It's not the exact same idea, but it's a similar idea, right, which is that the work is not just a work out here. The work first becomes internal work. And if you do your internal work, so then hopefully the influence will follow, right? But if we're focused on the influence only, then we're going to forget to look in here and understand what it is that we're supposed to do. They say a beautiful word, the pasuk, the mission says in Pirkei Avos, Al tadunis chavercha acha dagil mikomo. Don't judge a friend until you get into his place. So the normal pshat is that don't judge a person until you're in their shoes, right? But the Hasidim say, Al tadunis chavercha acha dagil mikomo. You want to know what a person's really like? Look in their house. See what it's like. See how they treat their family. Should they treat their spouse? Do they treat their children? That tells you the real deal about what a person's really about. I always tell every one of my students, there used to be a thing called no ring, no bring. You can't, right? You ever heard that? If you want to get engaged, you have to get engaged first, and then you can go for Shabbos. I always tell them it is the opposite. No bring, no ring. You have to go first and see what someone's like in their house. You can see them on a date. That's not a lot of dates. But when you see how they talk to their mother and father, you see how they talk to their siblings, you see how the parents interact with each other, that tells you way more about a person than how they act in the outside world, right? And it's the same idea. It's the same exact idea. So, maybe we said two ideas which are not exactly the same, but I think they're both really important. And on the one hand, the idea of Sari Menu, 127, like Esther 127, if I want to have an impact, first look here, right? If I look at myself, I work on myself, so then I can hope to have influence, and I can, for real, just by working on myself. And I think the same idea, Avraham Avinu, at the end of his days, what is he about? Family, take care of his wife, even after she passes away. Take care of my son, make sure he has a wife. He can start his own family. This is, once you have the legacy of your family, then other things can follow. Without it, then we're left empty. And I think that's really the main thing that we're trying to accomplish. Thank you. Have a great day, everybody. And a great rest.